This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraja aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside retired jockey Christina McManigal, back in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and welcoming everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and all of you tuning in on our website, on your smartphone, or on your tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Each week, a portion of the proceeds from Jock Talk are given back to the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, probably better known as the PDJF. And we encourage everyone to support PDJF and help those riders who have given our sport so much and are no longer able to do so because of a catastrophic injury that they suffered in the saddle. And you can do that by visiting pdjf.org. Christina, we have been privileged on this program over the past couple of months to visit with so many of the top riders in our sport. And tonight, no exception, going to be joined in just a couple of moments by jockey Corey Lannery. And such a delight to be able to each week bring our listeners these types of interviews and this type of insight into the people that really do make our sport a success.
Oh, Mike, it's fantastic to listen to their stories, and time flies every show, but they each have such a different story, and just their road to success is great to hear.
In the past couple of weeks, of course, I was out on vacation, but you had a chance to visit with John Court and with Ben Creed. Those shows are up on our website right now at horseracingradio.net, and I know you had a lot of fun talking with those guys.
Oh, I did. They're both so personable and so talkative, and great stories. Everyone should go check those out.
Well, as I mentioned, tonight's guest is jockey Corey Lannery. He has ridden 3,700-plus winners in his career since bursting onto the scene back in 1991. The 40-year-old native of Lafayette, Louisiana, is fresh off his 8th leading rider title at Churchill Downs, and he is with us here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Corey, welcome to the program, my friend.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking a little time. And first of all, congratulations on that, on yet another riding title at Churchill. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty special. This one was pretty close, though. Came down to the wire.
Yeah, it's not the fact that you've actually won your 8th title, but it's how you did it. Tell me about it.
Well, you know, it came down to the last day. Me and Julian went into the day tide, and I won a race early on the card. I think it was the 4th race, go up by 1. And came down to the end. I thought I had it wrapped up, and then he won the 10th. So he tied me again, and moving into the last race. He was, I think, on a favorite or second or third choice. I was on about a 10-1 shot, so I didn't know what to expect, but went into it, and I actually won the race, so put me back 1-up for the title.
Yeah, it's a great feeling. What's the jocks room like throughout the program, throughout that evening, as you guys are kind of going back and forth and duking it out?
It's same old, you know, just another work day. You know, when I won the race, you know, he congratulated me or whatever. And we as bad as we want to win it, you know, you don't root against anybody, but you definitely, I guess we'd rather see yourself win it, but you know, it's just what we do.
And Corey, you've not just won 8 riding titles at Churchill Downs, but you've won riding titles all over the country, Texas, Ellis Park, just everywhere.
Yeah, I've been blessed, you know, riding good horses, had a lot of good people behind me, and I've been a leading rider at all of the Texas major racetracks at Sam Houston, Rotama, and Lone Star. And then over here at Ellis Park, I've been a leading rider. Churchill, and still didn't get Keeneland, though. Came within one last fall, but that's one I would really like to get.
Is that one of the goals that Corey Lannery still has for himself?
Oh, yeah. You know, absolutely, because that's a prestigious racetrack over there, and it's where all the good riders come, so to get that one would be pretty special.
What does being a leading rider at a racetrack do for a jockey and for his career, Corey?
Well, it helps you. You know, you get people that come in to run horses from out of town, and the first thing they look for, if they need a rider, you know, they start at the top of the list. So if your name's at the top and they have a good horse coming, you got a pretty good chance of getting a phone call to maybe getting on that horse. So it definitely helps you get business and a lot of recognition.
And, Corey, describe how that works, how you, as a jockey, you need to win more, and it's kind of a cycle the way that works. You're obviously at the top right now, but you've worked your way up, and you know the struggles coming up as a jockey in his career, and just describe what that's like.
Yeah, you know, I had one year in my career I won one race. People wouldn't even let me work horses. And then I went to Texas and got to ride more and obviously got better. When you start winning, people notice you, and it snowball effects. You know, like you said, the more you win, the more people want you, and the more live business comes your way. And when you're not winning, people just don't even want to look your way or want to give you a chance. And, you know, it's not really us. It's just the type of horses that we're getting on, you know. But people really want the guys that are winning.
Corey, how do you continue to remain positive during a year like that where you win one race? And do you ever think of just saying, hey, enough's enough, I'm going to do something else?
Oh, actually, I thought that was coming. I was like, what am I going to do? You know, I guess I'm going to have to do something else. And that's when I went and tried Texas. And then it turned around, and I started doing good and worked my way back up to the bigger racetracks and the better quality. But there was a point where I thought I'd have to find another job, another career.
All right, well, let's go back to the beginning then. You grow up in Lafayette, Louisiana, considered the center of Cajun culture, which we hear so much about, and so many great riders have come out of that part of the country. Tell me about growing up in Lafayette and how you eventually became interested in horses.
My dad was a jockey, and my friend was a jockey also. So I grew up on the race, like really at Evans and Downs. I was on the backside since I could walk. And my grandparents trained in the backyard at home, so I was kind of galloping race horses on and off probably since I was 8 years old. And from there, just from that day, I wanted to be a jockey my whole life, you know. And then started galloping race horses probably when I was 15 at John Frank's farm in Opelousas. And then from there, I got my jockey license when I was 16 at Evans and Downs.
Wow. So, Corey, you were starting to gallop horses at the age of 8 or 9, which is incredible to think about. How was it for you? Were you immediately comfortable on the back of a horse?
Oh, yeah. You know, I had a horse my whole life or whatever, and I knew and didn't know anything different, you know, to be scared. I was never scared. It was what I wanted to do, and I was going to do it.
Did you ever think about doing something different other than horse racing?
No. I don't know. if someone told me tomorrow I had to do something else, I would be lost. Well, I don't think there's anything else I could do. Maybe go.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I'd be very good at that.
Well, I know you do play a lot of golf. We'll get to that later on in the program here because I know that's one of your big hobbies. But take me back to Lafayette, though. What else is there to do in Lafayette? I know it's a good-sized city, but what else do you do for entertainment outside of riding horses? Because every time we have somebody on the show from Lafayette, it seems like they're a top-class jockey.
That's a good question because I never did anything else. You know, I don't know. You know, since I was like 8 or 9, I would go to work with my dad and stay all day to gallop his one horse in the afternoon. He trained for himself once he got off. So I was working with him on the farm all day, and then we'd take care of his horse, and he'd let me gallop it And during the summer when I was out of school, that's what I would do. I would do that, or I'd go to work with my uncle all day and just spend the days with him. So where I lived, where it was mostly just my family on a block in the country, in the woods, and I was the only kid. So I had no one to play with or nothing to do, so I would go to work with somebody.
Corey, did you have any interest in school? I know many of the riders we have on this show that were so involved in racing from an early age, they really didn't like going to class.
Yeah, no, I didn't like it, but my parents were pretty strict, and so I made decent grades. I was a 3.0, you know, and I had to maintain my grades or they wouldn't let me go gallop. So, but I did drop out after the 10th grade and I got my GED because I started riding at 16, and it was time to move from Evangeline Downs to Louisiana Downs in Shreveport. So instead of and Shreveport ran in the daytime also, so there was no way I could go to school and do both like when I had started. So I had to drop out and get my GED.
Was your dad happy with your decision to be a jockey?
I think so. I think so. They never, ever discouraged it, you know. I think they always knew I was going to be a jockey, and I don't know, it's just the way it was meant to happen, I guess, because it's crazy.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned your dad being a jockey, and you mentioned your grandfather and talking about being around his horses, too. What's the best advice that you received from your dad when you finally decided to make this move?
They just always told me to keep my nose clean, you know, and do the right thing and just treat people really nice with respect, you know. And that'll take you a long ways, you know, just be fair.
Now, in regards to riding, did your dad teach you everything you know, or did you have any other mentors coming up along the way?
I had a few people. My dad he taught me a lot, but I think he was a little scared to turn me loose and let me go, you know, to start galloping because he was scared I would get hurt. So when I started really galloping a lot of race horses, I would go to work with him, and they had another trainer there. His name was Ted Sutterth, I think, and he had a barn full. So when my dad would go to work, then they'd let me gallop a bunch of them. And that's where I got a lot of my firsthand experience.
How about Mom? What did she think of the decision?
She was happy with it. You know, she gets really nervous, I'm sure. But she always knew that's what I was going to do. That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I guess there's no way to hold him back. And we're, of course, visiting with jockey Corey Lannery on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Corey, we mentioned so many top riders coming out of Louisiana and, as they call it, Cajun country. Was there a rider that you looked up to or idolized as you were growing up?
Yes, I think probably Kent DeSarmo, Eddie Delahoussaye, and Randy Romero was the first ones I really recognized, you know. And they were from Louisiana, so I was kind of biased, but I'd always watch them and just wanted to be like them.
What is it about them? Let's take Kent, for example. What is it about Kent that makes him so good?
I think Kent is very unique. He makes things happen with horses that you think doesn't have a chance. He's very talented. He sometimes does a lot of wild things with horses, but it works. And he gets the job done. He's amazing to watch.
Corey, talk to us about the infamous bush tracks and your experiences there.
Well, I didn't ride a whole lot because my parents were scared I would get hurt again. But I think I rode like 10 races at the bush tracks, mostly my dad's horse. And I think I had a couple winners, but it was kind of phasing out, actually, whenever I was old enough. Whenever my mom didn't let me ride there, I was 15. So there wasn't a whole lot of races or in big fields or it wasn't like when I was a kid and we'd go and there was a lot going on. But I got some experience and some exposure to riding races over there. And it was good.
We've had several riders from Louisiana on this program, guys like Calvin Burrell and Shane Sellers, and they would all tell you that riding on those bush tracks, and I know you just said you didn't do a lot of it, but riding there and growing up there, it made you tough, and it really helped when you finally got to the big racetracks. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, I think it taught you a lot of defense riding, you know, because there was no cameras there and no stewards, so there was a lot of rough riding, and you had to protect yourself at the same time try to win. So I think you learn some tricks and how to get out of tricks. So I think it definitely gave you some experience on race riding.
So then when you make the transition to a racetrack where now all of a sudden you do have cameras on you and you have stewards watching your every move, growing up doing it the other way, was it a difficult transition to adapt to that new way of riding?
Not for me, because like I said, I didn't do a whole lot on the bush track. So it was pretty much still learning and just doing what I was supposed to do, you know, keeping them straight and just trying to ride a smart race. But and then when I started riding at 16, I was really green and probably should have waited another year. So I wasn't as prepared as Calvin and Shane and them were when they came off the bush track. Because I think they started way younger than I did, too.
Yeah, those guys, they're old guys.
Yeah, well, and I think they probably started riding races at 8 or 9. You know, so there was an experienced jock at 15.
How about, you mentioned idolizing guys like Kent DeSormo and Craig Perrett and other guys who came up there, Eddie Delahousse. Do you remember the first time you had a chance to compete against those guys in a race?
No, actually, because I think Kent had left town. He was riding in California. And I don't know if I ever rode against Eddie. I rode some against Craig Perrett once I came to Kentucky. And when I came here, Pat Day was here and all the big guys. So it was pretty intimidating at first.
What sets those type of jockeys apart, Corey, from, say, your average everyday rider?
I think they're the way they handle themselves, the way they can talk to owners and trainers and just prepare themselves to ride a smart race. You know, they don't get nervous. You know, they always have a plan going into the race. They're just professional.
Corey, is it any different these days than from when you first started out, the jockeys, the riders, the way they ride in the jocks room?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I started, and I started back home in Louisiana, and we always thought, you know, I thought I won races, you know, not the horse. So we would ride probably not the smartest race to try to get in somebody else's way, maybe the favorite, and probably cost both of us the race. Now I've learned up here, you know, once I came to Kentucky to ride my horse and try to ride a smarter race and just do my own thing. So it's different.
Yeah, what is the biggest factor in right now, Corey? You're at the top of your game and you're riding so well and you're one of the top riders in the sport today. And I think, in my opinion, quite frankly, one of the more underrated riders that we have in the game today. I don't know if you get the credit that you deserve, but what is the difference in terms of when you started and where you are today? How much different is Corey Lannery?
I think a whole lot different, a whole lot more settled and established out there so I can ride with less pressure, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And well, back then I was kind of trying to make my name and, you know, maybe riding a little underconfident. But now I have a lot more confidence when I go out there with the way I'm going to ride a race. And trainers kind of let me do what I think I need to do now, besides when they used to throw me up, you know, they would give me instructions and tell me what they want and how they done it. And now, doing what I've done, you know, they'll just throw me up and tell me good luck, you know what to do.
And I can imagine as a young kid, taking instructions had to be a bit of a challenge, was it?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and then you try to follow the instructions and, you know, once the gate's open and everything's different, So, and then you try to still follow the instructions instead of taking it into your own hands, you know? So, that's probably one of the biggest differences. Now I can kind of make my own decisions out there and come back, and people, the trainers will agree with me and, you know, understand why I did what I did.
Yeah, and I think, Christina, you can relate to this. Just to give you an example of that, and I've had several riders tell me this, the trainer will give you a leg up and say, okay, going into the first turn, I want you 2 lengths off the lead. And if they go 21-2, you know, do you still want me 2 lengths off the lead? And,
exactly.
And, you know, it's that type of give and take, I guess. Mm-hmm. And tell me if I'm saying that correctly, Corey.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And I still get that sometimes, you know, get them to make your move at the 3/8 pole or do something like, you know, or keep them 4 or 5 lengths off the lead. And you don't know what the pace is going to be, you know?
What's the most bizarre instructions you've ever received?
Oh, I've had one guy, I don't remember his name. He was like, he gave me step by step where to go, and I'd have him like 6 lengths off of the 3/4 pole and then move him up to 2 lengths, and he don't like the inside, but don't lose no ground.
Okay.
I was so confused. He told me like 2 different sets of instructions.
And the problem is, whenever you don't follow instructions exactly, then it's your fault when you know.
right. And this one guy, he's like, well, why were you so far back? Well, I had to wait for your horse.
Yeah, sometimes there's just nothing you can do about it. I mean,
right.
You can only do
that,
yeah, what you can do with the horse that you have underneath you, right?
Yeah. Yep. They don't understand. We're riding, not running.
Corey Lannery here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Corey, let's go back to a day that I know you probably remember very well. Back in 1991, April 19th at Evangeline Downs, you win your very first race aboard a horse called High Hopes Banquet. Take me back to that day and tell me about that experience.
Yeah, man, that was awesome that night there. I remember the race like it was yesterday. I was broke and was way in the back of the pack, like second to last, and came through on the rail the whole way. Came through a hole that I probably shouldn't have. And I'll never forget, because I was hitting left-handed, coming through a hole that was about 2 feet wide. And got up and won the race for C.D. Dalhousie. So that was pretty special. That was a good feeling.
How'd you celebrate that night? Do you remember?
Probably just went home with my mom and dad. I was 16. So I couldn't do anything. And I had to get up the next morning and go to work. It was night racing. So that was pretty tough. But I'm sure the next morning I woke up pretty easily after that.
What goes through your mind when, I know you're only 16, I know you're a young kid, but when you finally break through after, you know, some of the sacrifice and all the hard work you put in to get to that point, What actually goes through your mind when you cross the finish line and you're coming back to the winner's circle for the first time?
Probably just everything in your life leading up to it, you know, from learning how to ride and thinking about your family and all that. My mom was there. My dad was there. Just at that time, though, I think I was just excited, just glad to be a jockey, you know, not really thinking about much at that point in my life.
Yeah.
But just enjoying the moment.
Corey, how long did it take you, do you remember, from when you first took out your jock's license to the point to where you won your first race?
Maybe a month. I remember it was my 23rd month. So I rode 2022, and then on my 23rd when I won. So I would guess about 3 weeks or a month, because I'm sure I wasn't riding that much.
Yeah, that's not that much time. That's... Well done, my friend. That's not that much time at all. We've heard other riders who will tell us that they'll go much longer periods, especially when they're first getting started like that and starting to learn. Then other people, it just clicks for them, and they happen to fall on the right horse the first time out, and boom, they're a winner, and they get that first win behind them.
Yeah. A lot of guys get set up to do that. You know, you try to get a live mount for their first one so they can win it. But I didn't have that luxury. Or maybe I just wasn't good enough. Maybe I did have some good ones.
How about some of the trainers that you associated yourself with, and some of the guys and maybe even ladies that believed in Corey Lannery as you were just getting started?
Well, C.D. Delahoussaye, who put me on my first winner, he let me ride a bunch. He really believed in me. And Glenn Delahoussaye, he had put me on my first schooling races, actually, and in my first mount. And so I rode some for him. And like in the first couple years I rode for Dale Angel. I think a lot of these guys might have retired. I know Glenn Delahoussaye is still training. But and then when I went to Texas and started doing really good, I started riding for Steve Asmussen, and he helped me out a bunch.
Yeah, not bad to fall into that barn, huh?
Yeah, no, he made me a better rider. You know, he was sometimes hard to ride for because he was some things he would say was hard for me to comprehend at first. But once I would understand what he was trying to tell me, it definitely made me a much better rider.
What would he tell you that was so difficult?
Just he wanted you on the rail, you know, all the time. Keep going left before you go right. And
good move.
Yep. Just different things that he would try to tell me that I couldn't comprehend, you know, till like maybe a month later I was like, oh, that's what he meant. He would use words I didn't know.
Do you feel like that really polished your skills as a rider riding for him?
I think so, you know, definitely, because he was having it about saving ground and not, you know, I'd have sometimes, I guess, pedal in the middle, maybe make an early move, and he would get on to me pretty good about it, and then I would finally get it, you know, and click in, and he so much on saving ground, and then he had the better horses, you know. It's hard to learn on a slow horse, so when I was riding the better horses, it was much easier to learn and to learn how to feel your horse and know what you have underneath you.
Yeah, it's amazing that once you finally fall into that scenario, it doesn't take long until people start to take notice. And I'm sure that even though you're riding for Steve, I'm sure a lot of other trainers started to look at Corey Lannery a little bit differently at that point, didn't they?
Right, right. You know, especially just because you're riding for him, you know, they kind of catches their eye and say, oh, he must be pretty good if Steve's riding him, you know. So then they would try to get you, and it would just bring more business your way.
Jockey Corey Lannery joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We're going to get to a break. We'll come back and continue this visit in the second half of the program. Stay tuned. It's all here on Jock Talk on HRN.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage. Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.
And we're going to kick things off with trainer Graham Motion, Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott here on Trainer Talk. Roger Atfield is going to be with us for the next half an hour. Carl Nasker, an honor to have him on the show tonight. Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahey, nice enough to spend some time with us. I want to welcome Hall of Famer Bob Baffert to the program.
Trainer Talk, the biggest names in horse racing. Wednesdays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206. And always streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
Good evening, everyone. This is Corey Johnson with the Jockey Talk 360 Weekly Recap. On Saturday night, the nation's top jockeys showed off their skills. Javier Castellano took his show on the road and went to Prairie Meadows. While there, he won both graded stakes. He won the Iowa Derby on Bourbon, paid over $10 to win, and then he won the Cornhusker Handicap on Golden Lad. Golden Lad had a determined stretch drive. Javier was at his best. Javier Castellano was named the Jockey Guild Jockey of the Week for last week. For the year, Javier has 172 wins and over $11 million in earnings. On Saturday night, the real theater was at Churchill Downs. Corey Lannery and Julian Leperoux were tied for leading rider at Churchill Downs with 38 wins each at the beginning of the card. Both of them rode in almost every race, so it was almost like a PGA Tour event where the two leaders came down to the last day. Tied at 38 wins, Lannery wins the fifth race aboard Mariana Star, so he's up by one. You go through the card, Lannery actually ran second in the ninth race, only got beat a half length, but in the 10th, Julian Leperoux punches back, and he wins at 8-1. So they go into the last race of the meet, the last race of the card, the 11th race, and Corey Lannery wins on an outsider, a 7-1 long shot to take the title. It was a lot of fun watching that important sporting event that night at Churchill Downs. Another thing is to remember, jockeydraft.com is your fantasy sports league for jockeys, and they have a lot of new games, and they're going to be announcing some big games upcoming. I can't wait until Del Mar and Saratoga, where I can pick my stable of jockeys for one of those great cards at either of those tracks. Once again, this is Corey Johnson reporting for Jockey Talk 360, and you can go to jockeytalk360.com and go to our Twitter handle to learn more about jockeys and riding in North America.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, retired jockey Christina McManigal. We are in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and continuing this visit with jockey Corey Lannery. Really fun in the first half of the program and really excited to hear the rest of his story. Talk about some of the career highlights that he's had in more than 3,700 career winners. Should be a lot of fun. Don't forget, if you do miss any portion of this program, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this show and all of our Jock Talk shows. They're all available for you right there, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes as well. And you can listen to them on Ken McPeak's Horse Races Now app. So if you have the app on your phone, you can click on our channel, as we are a channel partner with Horse Races Now, and another great way to keep in touch with all the great programming here on HRRN. As I mentioned, jockey Corey Lannery has had so much success in the saddle, and one of the wins that I'm sure he is never going to forget is that first Grade 1 victory, which came in 2009, came at Keeneland in Lexington, Kentucky, when he won the Grade 1 Ashland Stakes aboard Who Why. And Corey, I know that that day had to be extremely special for you.
It was, you know, it was totally unexpected. It was a pickup mount, so I went to ride that day, not even thinking I would ride the race. So that was really special.
Yeah, wasn't it Renee Douglas that was supposed to ride the horse?
Yeah, Renee Douglas was named on him, and he got sick. I don't know if he had drank something, a Red Bull or something made him sick, and said he was taking off. So whenever we heard that, and me and Robbie Alvarado are really good friends, and he heard up, he told me, he said, hey, call your agent. He said, try to get on that horse. She's okay. Because I think he had rode her maybe in the Breeders' Cup race before that.
Yeah.
And I said, all right. Well, I think his agent, Lenny Pike, actually called the guy, and long story short, he got me on the horse. And she went right to the front and then ended up winning by like a long neck. And it was crazy. It was probably my biggest win. Well, I know it was my biggest win of my career, but the moment, the excitement was so much. And my wife and my daughter came running, and they knew I had picked up the horse, but they didn't even know it was a big stake. They ran into the infield, and my little girl, who I don't think was a year old, or she might have been just a year old, she came. She didn't even have her shoes on. It was funny. But it was definitely a moment we'll never forget.
I like the way he put it when he talked about Renee Douglas drinking something and then becoming ill, right? Corey was in the back room sprinkling something in the water in the Red Bull.
Yeah.
Once he heard how good this filly was.
Well, and you got to love those surprises. The horse went off at 24-1 also. Not only did he pick up the horse, but a long shot at that. And what a nice surprise.
It is, you know. But they always say a lot of horses, a lot of pickup mounts win for one reason or another.
Yeah, just ask Johnny V. He picked up a mount for the Kentucky Derby, and that one worked out okay.
Oh, yeah.
That was at the expense of Robbie.
Yeah. Animal Kingdom.
Yeah. Wow, and that was not an easy field in the Ashland that day either. I mean, you had Champion Stardom Bound, who was in there, and you had to beat her, and you had to beat another solid group. And even Robbie, he was in there aboard, Nan, who was, I think, finished fifth in that race that day.
Right. I had watched the replay, and Stardom Bound, I guess, had won the race before. And it looked like Hawaii had a lot of horse turning for home and kind of waited, and then when Stardom Bound got to them, they went, and she got beat. So I thought, well, I'll just take off a little sooner and try to steal it, and it worked. But it was funny because without watching the replay, I don't know if I'd have won that race.
Yeah, how do you prepare? I mean, I know watching the replay obviously is a big part of that, Corey, but how do you prepare to ride a horse for the first time when you pick up the mount at the last minute like that?
I just studied the racing form most of the time. You know, now they have the replay machines in most of the jocks rooms. So that helps a lot. You can watch your horse and actually your competitors. So, basically just read the form and see where you think you're going to be laying, see what the pace is going to do, and see where you need to be.
How about your normal preparation every day when you show up at the track? How do you go about preparing to ride each card?
When I get to the jocks room and I sign in, I'll grab a program and go to the board and just mark all my scratches. And then I'll go in there. Sometimes the last month or so I've been jogging. I'll get dressed and go jog a round or two around the turf course and just get prepared for the day and come back in and study the races a little more right before I go out. And just go ride.
Corey, I know some riders, a horse like that you've never ridden before, I know some riders like to break away from the pony and give the horse a really good warm-up to try to figure the horse out a little bit. Do you like to do that? Is that something you would do?
I do. You know, I do that on almost every horse I ride. I'll go by myself and warm him up unless the trainer tells me that he's too tough or not to do it. But I feel like a horse warms up a whole lot better without the pony kind of holding them, you know. To me, with the pony horse, they warm up a little crooked, you know, they hold their head up maybe a little high, or he can't get out and stretch like he in his normal gait. So I like to go by myself, and it does give you a much better feeling though, if you have one that wants to lug in or lug out, you know, you can feel and see where you're at and kind of get a feel of what he's going to do.
Can you tell during the warm-up, Corey, if the horse is ready to run a big race or not?
I think so. Most of the time, you know, you can tell by a horse's color and his skin, just maybe the way he's acting, looking around, happy. Some of them will be nervous, you know, and just run their race before the race starts. You know, it'll tell you a lot if you listen.
So what are you looking for then when you break away from the field and you're doing those final warm-ups after the post parade? What are you looking to get out of that horse or to sense from that horse?
Just a nice, relaxed gallop, you know, stretching his legs out, not really crabby or body sore. You know, you just hope that he's moving smooth and is happy looking around, you know, and not washing out, not getting too hot. Just calm, cool, and collected.
Corey, you mentioned that lately you've been going out to the turf course to jog, and that brings back memories for me wearing a sweatsuit trying to lose weight, and not really good memories of that, but do you have a hard time with that, Corey?
Yeah, I have to watch it, you know, and that's why I put on a sauna suit too and go out there. It's much, much better and easier than going sit in the sauna, you know, so I just go out for a jog and it comes off a whole lot easier to me, and it doesn't seem near as long.
Exactly.
But I have no willpower at the table, so I have to watch for that. So I have to go sweat.
Too much crawfish?
Yeah. Oh, I had crawfish etouffee last night.
Well, isn't that low fat? Is crawfish low fat?
The crawfish is, but it's what you put on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gravy and stuff that my wife makes it makes it pretty fattening.
Does she do all the cooking, or do you like to do some Cajun cooking too?
No, I can barely boil water. And she can cook just about anything. She's a really good cook.
All right, let's talk about your wife here for a minute. You've been married for a while now. You do have your daughter, Britlin. Was that a racetrack romance? Is that how that came about?
Yeah, it was a funny story. I met her at Evangeline Downs. I was riding, and her and some of her friends were at the racetrack, and I had seen them a couple of nights in a row. So one day I told them to wait for me after the last race, and they waited. So, and that was it. And we've been married 18 years now. We've been together like 22.
Wow, it's really been that long. I didn't realize it was 18 years.
Yeah.
Wow. And how about little Britlin? You said she came running out for the Ashland Stakes, no shoes on, gives you a big hug after you win the Ashland, your first grade one. She comes to you and says, Dad, I want to be a jockey. What do you tell her?
Whatever, you know, I would hope not, but, you know, but I don't think I'll have to worry about that. She's not too brave yet anyhow.
I was told that
she wants to be a model.
Oh, she wants to be a model?
Oh.
Yeah, she says she's going to be a model and build a castle and me and Mom can live with her.
Nice.
It's much better than risking life and limb, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love
yeah.
the name Britlin. It's such a unique name. Where did that come from?
That's from Britlin Racing Stables with Star Guitar. And like 10 years before we even thought about having a kid, Miss Evelyn Benoit, who owns Star Guitar, you would go to the track at the fairgrounds, and my wife was a mutual clerk, and they became really, really good friends. And she said since they met, if I ever have a kid and it's a girl, I want to name her Britlin. And that's how we got the name. But the name Britlin came from her name, Evelyn, and her daughter's name's Brittany. And then so she put them together.
Wow.
I like that.
That's cool. Yeah, that's really neat. Did I hear you're teaching her to play golf too?
I'm trying. She don't know if she likes it or not. She came with me yesterday and played all day, and she hit a few balls. But she says she likes tennis better.
Corey, how is it for your family? I know, obviously, the life of a jockey is busy, and travel is required a lot. I read an article in the Evansville Courier Press where they interviewed you, and you said that you're at Ellis Park on a certain day, Delaware Park on Saturday, back to Ellis, up to Hoosier Park on Tuesday and Wednesday. You didn't know about Thursday yet. And it was an interesting article to read because it perfectly described how busy, you know, a successful rider will be. And so how is that for your family to deal with you traveling all the time and oftentimes moving?
Yeah, well, it's hard, you know, wasn't too hard before we had Britlin, and then now she started school. You know, when she was a baby, it wasn't hard. We'd all pack up and go together. And when she started school her first year, they stayed back winter before last as I went to Gulfstream, and that was hard. You know, so then the next year we put her in a school in Florida and they moved with me. So we'll do that and try to move her back and forth as long as she's doing okay and is capable of handling it, you know, and because we don't, you know, we don't want to be apart.
Talking with jockey Corey Lannery here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Corey, I mentioned you're coming off of that eighth leading rider title at Churchill Downs. I guess next for you will be Saratoga this summer, right?
Yeah, we're going to go to Saratoga. This will be my second time going over there.
What'd you think of it the first time?
It was nice. It's different. It's a lot of good racing, and a lot of people go to the races. It's fun. It's exciting, you know. It's really fun to win a race there.
I can imagine it's difficult to win a race there, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very, very tough. You know, you got the best jockeys in the country there and the best trainers. If you don't get on a good horse there, you're in trouble.
How much will that leading rider title help you when you get to Saratoga?
It definitely will not hurt, but I don't know how much it helps because there's probably 10 riders over there that have riding titles somewhere, you know? So everybody there is good, but it definitely can't hurt. You know, it's nice to be able to walk around and say I was leading rider at Churchill Downs, you know, when you're introducing yourself and just shaking hands with people. But over there you can probably go 15 deep and somebody was leading rider. Had multiple titles.
Yeah.
Corey, I spent 1 year at Saratoga and just absolutely loved it. But I know, as you said, it's so tough there. You really see almost all of the jockeys out every morning. Is it really, do you hustle a lot more there than any other track?
For me, it was about the same. I kind of had my business set up when I went there. And Billy Castle had taken my book last year. So I wrote a lot for David Jacobson. But, you know, going there, I don't think it's a meet where you can – I mean, you want to go out and hustle, but people – it's so short of a meet. They know where they're going to run and pretty much who they're going to ride or who they're going to try to ride, you know?
So you kind of have to have that lined up before you get there?
You kind of go with your own business and, you know, hopefully something else might slip through the cracks and, you know, somewhere along the line, somebody might miss something and you pick up a mount and it wins. But I think most of the guys there are pretty set on with their own business when they get there. Kind of like a Keeneland meet, you know?
Yep. You know, if you go to the Jockeys Guild website, each jockey has a profile on there and they ask certain questions or the jockeys answer certain questions. And one of those is what your career goals are going to be. And I know that you stated this a while back, Corey, but it says that your career goal is to be known as a top rider on the Kentucky and Louisiana circuit. And considering the fact that you've won 8 riding titles at Churchill now, you've won every major riding title in the state of Louisiana, I think that that has to make you feel pretty good. And you'd have to say career goals, number one, accomplished.
Right. Yep. You know, it's funny to look back at that because I never thought, you know, especially when I had the year where I was struggling, that I just wanted to make a living, you know, and then now to be leading rider 8 times at Churchill and then all the major racetracks in Texas, to go back and look at it, it's wow, you know, we came a long way.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible, really, to think about where it all started and where it is today. What's next for Corey Lannery? What other goals do you have for yourself?
You know, I'd like to start riding more Grady races, you know, have them out in the Kentucky Derby again next year in the Triple Crown races. But I don't know, my goal is just to keep doing what I'm doing and just keep winning races and just try to stay on top.
Corey, you also last year, you were honored with the George Wolfe Memorial Award, really the highest award that can be given to a jockey. How is that to receive, to look back on everything you've accomplished and to receive that?
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, that was pretty special to make you realize that people really, really noticed you, you know, and that you're liked by your fellow riders, you know. So that was pretty special. And to go back and look at all the guys who have won that award and some pretty big names on that list. So just to be be even mentioned to be nominated for that award was pretty special. And then to win it was just over the top.
Yeah, you're a humble guy anyways, but I can imagine that when you finally get the call that you're going to be the recipient, I think you were nominated, what, three times? And then you finally end up being the recipient this year. You just kind of had to be almost taken back because that's voted on by your peers. And I know every rider that's ever won it has always told me it means so much to their career and what they're all about.
Exactly. You know, you want to be you want everybody to like you and, you know, people to, you want to help guys and just be a good role model. And once when you win that award, you realize you must have been doing the right things. So, and it makes you feel really good.
Who gave you the news that you won it?
I think Terry Meeks.
Yeah. From the Jockeys
or Darryl Hare.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite an honor. It was very special. I know you flew to Santa Anita to accept the award and had to be a very special day for you. You mentioned just a moment ago, maybe another career goal would be to ride another Kentucky Derby. You've done it one time. That was last year with Harry's Holiday. Look back on that day and that experience. What was it like?
Oh, man, that was awesome. It was like all my life, you know, growing up as a kid, I can remember watching Sunday Silence and Easy Goer. I was laying down on the living room floor watching that race with my parents. And it was funny how just when that day came, that's what I was thinking about, you know, and my parents came up. I had a house full of people that always said if ever I rode the Kentucky Derby that they were going to be there. So we had a house full, and it was just like I felt more proud for my parents and people that watched me grow up and come through, you know, to make it to where I am today. So it was just like satisfying to see them get to see me ride the Kentucky Derby.
Were you maybe a little extra nervous during the day?
Actually not. You know, it was weird. I was just ready to go. It was more of a, you know, let's go. Get in the gates. And, you know, I had a perfect trip. The horse broke really good. And reading the racing form, I wanted to position myself right behind California Chrome. And that's where I was going, coming out of the first turn. And just didn't have the horse, you know. And, of course, he was a long shot, so that kind of relieved a little pressure. If I'd have been 8-5, I don't know what would happen.
Is there a difference in the feeling you get when you're aboard a horse that's odds on as opposed to a horse that's maybe 30 or 40 to 1?
I think so. You know, a horse that's 30 or 40 to 1, some people aren't really expecting, you know, him to win or anything. And so it takes a little pressure off. And when I know when I'm on the favorite, a lot of times I might get a little nervous because I don't want to mess it up. I don't want it to be my fault if the horse gets beat, you know. So if we go out and he gets beaten, it's not my fault. It's okay. But a lot of the pressure I put on myself is to not screw it up.
Did you get choked up during my old Kentucky home?
No. I had a smile. I was just happy.
He's just enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
I read, Corey, that you sought out the advice from Calvin Burrell and Robbie Alvarado before that race.
Yeah, yep. Me, I share a corner with Calvin Burrell and Brian Hernandez, and Robbie's right next to us. And, yeah, we talked about it, and they gave me some advice and just to ride it as a normal race, you know, and it's nothing different. Just another race.
A few more horses, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, how much different is that with 18, 20 horses in a race?
Oh, man, it was, you know, I had a little speed, so I broke and got kind of in a good position right behind the leaders going into the first turn. But, and they had a lot of bumping, a lot of screaming going on in the first turn. It was, it seemed a little hectic. But it's just, you know, once the gates open, it's all reaction. You react to whatever happens.
How many goggles did you wear?
I think I wore six. Yeah, five or six. I think six, though.
All right, yeah. So how do you not fall off the horse when you're pulling your goggles down? Because as somebody who doesn't ride horses, that would seem like a major challenge to me.
I know, right? But it's just natural. I don't even – some races you don't even notice you're doing it, I'm sure. But when you can't see, you'll find a way to pull it down.
That's for sure.
Just hope you don't pull them all down.
I did that once. It's
okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure we all have.
Really? Yeah. They all come flying down?
That's not good.
That's not good. Then you can't see anything, right?
Oh, it hurts all in your eyes.
You start trying and it hurts. That might be the worst feeling in the world.
I think
all
so.
Pancake, guys.
What about changing whips from one hand to the other? Is that easy to change the stick?
For me, yeah. Asking us now, when you start, it's probably a little complicated. You know, I don't remember exactly when I learned or how I learned. But I remember one time at Evangeline Downs when I just started riding. I was on a two-year-old and turned for home. I think I was three in front, and I hit him right-handed once or twice, and he went right over the fence. And from that day on, I learned to switch sticks and hit him left-handed.
That'll do it.
Yeah. So now my first instinct is when I turn for home, unless the one's getting out, he's going to get hit left-handed instead of right-handed.
Jockey Corey Lannery on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Corey, just about 3 or 4 minutes left here before we have to wrap things up. It's really flown by, but you mentioned earlier one of your major hobbies is golf, and I know your good friend Robbie Alvarado is also a pretty good golfer. Do you guys get a chance to play together quite a bit?
Yeah, quite a bit. We're actually playing today. We got a tee time later on today, but we play probably at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. He has a little more stuff to do than I do, so he don't play quite as much.
Who's the better golfer?
He is.
Yeah?
Yep. He's about 5 strokes better than me.
Does he give you strokes?
Yeah, but I have to beg. he don't want to come off of no strokes.
Maybe a little friendly wager every now and then?
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's for sure. We don't go out if we ain't wagering.
Yeah.
Anyhow, just for bragging rights.
Yeah, how often do you get a chance to actually beat him?
I'll beat him 2 out of 5 times.
All right.
Lately, I've been pretty close to him. I might be playing better than him right now.
Practice makes perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Any other hobbies, Corey?
No, that's about it. I used to, we used to go to the lake a little bit, but not a whole lot. No, that's pretty much it. All I do is golf and ride horses.
That's a pretty good life. I think there's a lot of people that would take that, Corey.
Oh, I know it. I know it. Everybody tells me I got the best wife because every off day I'm playing golf.
I want to be Corey Lannery. I've just decided that. Well, Corey, look, we really appreciate the time. Always fun to catch up, and I'm going to look forward to seeing you in Saratoga as well. But we won't keep you from your tee time. Go enjoy it, and we'll talk to you here soon, my friend. Really appreciate you being with us here on Jock Talk.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
All right, and all the best moving forward.
Thank you.
All right, Jockey Corey Lannery here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. And what a nice guy, huh? I mean, so much fun. He's so humble. And as you heard him say, I either play golf or I ride horses. What a life.
You can't beat that. You know, because, I mean, I don't have a tea buddy either. I get to be on the radio with Mike Pena, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lucky you. Yeah,
I know.
I think I'd rather be Corey Lannery.
I think maybe.
Yeah, no, so cool. And you hear the way he got started and, you know, just never wanting to do anything else other than be a jockey. And how many times have we heard that story told on this program?
Yeah, what an incredible story. And how he told us also how he won one race one year. And look at where he's at today. You know, it's incredible to see how far he's come.
And it's a story of perseverance, because how many people would have just given up? And he thought about doing something else, but he didn't know, as you heard him say, he didn't know how to do anything else.
That's what he loved, and he stuck with it, and it paid off. Absolutely. It's what a great story.
Yeah. How about you? Did you know right away that you wanted to be a jockey?
I didn't grow up in a racing family like Corey, so it took me a little bit longer than for him. But you know, he grew up with it, and that's such a culture in Louisiana. And then to have his family at the Derby, and what a great story.
Yeah, just incredible. And our best to Corey Lannery moving forward here, and wishing him all the best at Saratoga and beyond. And, of course, if you missed any portion of this show, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out a podcast of all of our Jock Talk shows. Don't forget our Trainer Talk shows on Wednesday evening, all presented by Fasig Tipton. Thursday nights, the BristNet.com call-in show. And on Friday evenings, our Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. And, of course, every Saturday morning, our Equine Forum show. So you can tune into those shows all there for you at HRN, including all of our live race coverage. What more could you want?
That's it.
That's it. All right, for Christina McManigal, for jockey Corey Lannery, and for Lee Delapina, our producer, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Jock Talk.